My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's just really the start of the new Congress, just a couple of weeks in. But already we've got three important retirements in the 2012 cycle for the U.S. Senate. You and I talked previously about Kay Bailey Hutchison in Texas. This week we saw two Democrats, and we'll talk about each of them. First of all, Joe Lieberman, after four terms, deciding not to launch what would probably be a pretty brutal three-way race with him as an independent. The Democrats and the Republicans also putting nominees out there. So what do you make of his decision to step down, and is this the slam dunk for Democrats keeping the seat that most people think?
Joe Lieberman has been in politics almost since the day he got his undergraduate degree from Yale, and then he went on a few years later to the state Senate with the help of a young campaign volunteer named Bill Clinton. In more than 30 years on the ballot, he's only lost one election, and he didn't do that by being stupid. I've known Joe Lieberman since 1988 when he was first elected to the Senate, and I can tell you, I think he just looked at the political playing field and decided it was time to go back to the locker. Had he run as a Democrat, he would have almost surely lost the primary to a liberal contender. Remember his latest apostasy, not even mentioning that he backed John McCain for president,
right,
was killing public option in health care. He lost the Democratic primary 6 years ago, but won as an independent. Could he do it again? Highly unlikely. Republicans are expected to nominate, in contrast to 06, a strong candidate. That only works once. Joe Lieberman chose the better part of valor, and as you can see from the statements we're being showered with, leaves with his reputation as the conscience of the Senate intact.
And, John, do you believe that Congressman Chris Murphy is likely to be the prohibitive favorite here? Or do you think Linda McMahon or somebody else could make this a real race for the Republicans?
Chris Murphy, who even opposed the extension of the tax cuts that Barack Obama favored, is probably the favorite given the nature of who picks the Democratic nominee. Susan Bicewitz, the former Secretary of State, who was very key to Democrats winning a contested election for governor last fall, is also going to get into the race. That's going to be a rock'em sock'em primary. Right now, all eyes are on Linda McMahon, the wrestling tycoon who spent $50 million of her own money and gave a strong but losing race for the other Senate seat in Connecticut a year ago. My guess is she probably will run, but if she doesn't, there'll be other strong Republicans.
Let's move to North Dakota now. That was one of the most lopsided Republican pickups in 2010, with John Hoeven winning easily the seat vacated by Byron Dorgan. Now it's Kent Conrad, the Democratic chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, that's leaving. Obviously not an incumbent governor now that's not necessarily has the stature that Hoeven had, but given the way the elections went in North Dakota last year and the way their state officials have lined up behind the GOP, it looks like a pretty good pickup opportunity again for Republicans.
You said it, Greg. The Democrats have no bench. They're outnumbered overwhelmingly in both houses of the legislature. They have no statewide elected officials, except, of course, Senator Conrad. And the new freshman House member, Rick Berg, who defeated a veteran incumbent resoundingly last time, is already emerged as the favorite for the Republican nomination. That's pretty good to go from the House in one term to the Senate after 2 years. And my guess is that Rick Berg will make the race and win the Senate seat easily. And that also means that for the first time since 1958, Republicans will hold both seats in the Rough Rider state.
Very quick follow-up. Does that mean that Earl Pomeroy might have a good shot at winning his House seat back if it's vacated that soon?
I tend to doubt it. Earl Pomeroy is living proof of the old song, how are you going to keep him down on the farm after they've seen Paris? He's just joined a top law firm, Alston Byrd, whose partners include Bob Dole.
John, let's talk about another major issue this week, and that, of course, is the visit of Chinese President Hu Jintao to Washington. Given our less than thrilling trade status with them right now, certainly the trade imbalance and the fact that they kind of hold a lot of cards on the debt, but we also hold a massive market for their burgeoning economy, do you see that anything significant changed this week?
I'm not privy to the top secret communique that came out after the private dinner that President Obama and Hu Jintao had on Tuesday evening or other private discussions between themselves and the intermediate. I do know that in terms of the public image, it was a wash. Yes, the president did raise the issue of human rights when the cameras went on, and yes, a reporter questioned Hu Jintao about it. And then he commented basically that the two countries are very different, and he had nothing further to say. That's the answer he usually gives when anyone asks him about human rights. None of your business. My own view is that given the issues of currency, trade, human rights, not to mention Iran and North Korea, barring anything very dramatic that was in the private sessions, there's no change.
Two quick topics before we let you go, John. The House, as expected, repealing the president's health care plan. All the Republicans voting for repeal, but only three Democrats joining them. That was a little bit of a surprise. Most experts seem to think it's dead on arrival in the Senate. Mitch McConnell says not so fast. What do you say?
Mitch McConnell didn't get to where he was by not being able to count noses, and he may know something we don't. On the other hand, many members of Congress who voted for the repeal told me privately that what they are focusing on, the House having the power of the purse, is defunding other measures that come up that would underwrite parts of health care that are particularly egregious. And I refer to the IRS hiring 15,000 more agents to watch over the 1099 regulations, which will require more documentation from health providers than ever before imagined, and the Stupak-Pitts Amendment, which is going to be introduced separately. It died in the initial passage, and it would bar any federal dollars from being used for abortions in the health process. That's very likely to sail through the House. It may pass the Senate, I'm not sure, but it will be very interesting to see if Barack Obama signs something he said his executive order achieved already.
John, last topic, on to the foreign stage once again, and it feels like a flashback to the mid-1980s, but Haiti was back in the headlines, this time not for earthquake aftermath, but for the return of baby Doc Duvalier, who was pretty much instantaneously taken into custody for all the corruption he perpetrated many decades ago. Your thoughts on what's going on in Haiti?
Well, again, this is a country that's been devastated by an earthquake more than a year ago, has shown no signs of recovery, and has an election that apparently is disputed and very unclear. What could be a better time, then, for the controversial baby Doc Duvalier to return after 24 years in exile in France? I should point out that there has been a warrant out, and he must have known that he was going to be arrested when he came back. I suspect there were back channels between himself and the current president, Proval, under which he realized he would be charged, but we would be allowed to be free and among the people. Private aides to Mr. Duvalier have told the media off the record he would like to be president again. I'm not sure how he can go about it. But it's interesting that he's totally distracted from the confusion and the disaster that is so much a part of Haiti these days.
Last question, John, last 60 seconds. 30 years ago today, you were a Cub reporter here in Washington. Ronald Reagan sworn in, the hostages freed. What are your memories of that day?
Oh, I remember how happy I was, and I was getting very irritated because my then girlfriend at the time was taking so long to get ready to go out and see something I had just dreamed about for many years, the inauguration of my hero, Ronald Reagan, as president. And I remember it very well. I had an unusually good seat for such a young and novice reporter at the time, and I can remember very well when he said the words, "I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear," and then the announcement came, the hostages were free. I watched the parade that day, and I just felt better days are coming for America. And guess what? I got one right.
Well, 30 years. Hard to believe it's been that long. John, thanks as always for being with us.
Looking back with fond memories of the past and bright hopes for the future, even today, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America.